Well, as we continue through Ecclesiastes, we get to this chapter, and it's talking about wealth and riches. And what do we do with our riches? Now, by show of hands, how many people here would consider yourself rich? Half the crowd? Oh, okay. So really then, for the rest of you, this sermon's not for you, right? Gosh. What do I need to listen to this for? Well, before you walk out, okay, let's take a little survey. I want to put it into perspective, okay? So, those of us who might not consider ourselves wealthy, first of all, by a show of hands, how many of you have access to clean water? Wow, okay. I'm guessing it's everybody here, right? Yeah. Oh, bonus question. Do you not have to walk outside of your home and you don't have to walk some distance away to get that water by your hands? Wow, bonus, huh? Do you have indoor plumbing? Raise your hand. I think that's most everybody here. Bonus question. Do you have both hot and cold in coming out of the faucets? Wow, that's impressive. Now, are you not concerned about where your next meal will come from? How many of you are not concerned? Bonus question, how many of you will go out for lunch today? A few. Okay. A lot more frugal people than I anticipated. That's okay. That was just a bonus question, okay? How many people have electricity in their home? You have electricity? Gee, I hope so, huh? Bonus question, how many of you have internet? Most everybody. How many of you own more than one pair of shoes? Not everybody raised their hand on that one. Either your arms are getting tired of always raising them, but anyway, can I guess that everybody here owns more than one pair of shoes? How many of you have access to motorized transportation to get you from one place to another? You don't have to walk or ride a bicycle, yeah. Oh, bonus question, how many of you own your own car? A lot of you. How many of you have access to quality health care? So you get sick, you get real sick, you can go see a doctor. Wow. How many of you kids or your grandkids or your kids can go to school and you anticipate they're going to go to school all the way through high school? Bonus question, how many of you are anticipating your kids or grandkids are going to have an opportunity to go to college? Wow. Congratulations. If you answered yes, and I'm not even talking about the bonus questions, if you answered yes just to the nominal questions there, you are part of the world's wealthiest people, by far wealthiest people. Let me give you some statistics just in case you're not convinced. If your family income is $10,000 a year, you are wealthier than 84% of the people in this world. If your family income, combined income, is $50,000 or more, then you are the privileged 1%, top 1% of the wealthiest people in this world. Yeah. Wow. How many of you least this last week enjoyed a cup of coffee? Didn't even have to be Starbucks, but you bought a cup of coffee, right? Yeah, a few of you anyway. Did you know that you probably spent at least more on your cup of coffee than most people in the third world spend in a whole day? Check this out. More than a third of the people on the earth, I mean, it's 2-point-something billion. Like, I want to say 2.7 billion, if I remember right. Live on less than $2 a day. 1.2 billion people on this earth live on about a buck and a quarter or less a day. 1.45, almost 1.5 billion are multidimensionally poor. So in the three areas of health, education, and standard of living, these people are multidimensionally poor. So this includes suffering from severe malnutrition. Almost 1.5 billion in this world. Severe malnutrition, So they also evaluate child mortality. And so losing two or more children in the home, having no household member who has completed more than 1 year of schooling, using open defecation, that's a nice way of saying there's no indoor bathroom, maybe not outdoor bathroom, fetching water that is unsafe, or it takes you 45 or more minutes to walk to get that water. You don't own a mobile phone or radio, and you're cooking with wood or dung or straw only. And that's from the Oxford Poverty and Human Development Initiative. And 706 million are considered destitute. So that's beyond multidimensional poor. That is extreme deprivations. Let me give you, put those numbers in perspective. United States population is a little over 326 million. So double the population of the United States, and that's the number of people in this world who are destitute. Are you convinced you are rich? Every single one of us. In fact, never in the history of mankind has anyone experienced the kind of wealth that we have. Never. So, every person here is wealthy, and probably most of you, fabulously so. You are rich. So having established that, there's no one that's going to be excused from this sermon, right? We are wealthy. Now let's examine God's perspective on our wealth and what he expects of us, okay? So if you're going through your sermon notes, point two, there's a blank there. Wealth and satisfaction. In the text that Jim read out of Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10 says, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. How many of you heard the Bible say that money is the root of all kinds of evil? Wrong, I misquoted it. It's the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Money is neutral. It's neither good or bad. You can have gobs of it, and you are one of God's favorites, maybe. Okay? So please, I want to establish that. It's not the money, the amount, little or more. Okay? Money is neutral, but it's what's in our heart, the value we add to it, that can either lead us towards blessing or towards sin, and maybe even perdition. And that's a big word, means hell. Okay? So the value we put into it is very important. Now, there are those who are satisfied, and whether with a little or with a lot. And trust me, as a missionary, I worked in third world nations. I have visited some of those places that are hovels. The family that was coming, the Sears family, and it's going to be postponed. We're going to bring them back. But poor Andrea had back surgery, and it didn't go, the recovery isn't going as they had planned. And so with complete understanding, they had to postpone this. But they work, I've been to the neighborhood in Costa Rica where they work. And it's literally right there, built alongside of a garbage dump. It's a slum. But I've met people in places like that that are satisfied, content, happy, with 1/20th, 1/100th of what we have. They're satisfied. But I've met multi-millionaires who were not satisfied. And that's when it gets awful. I found this video, you can cue it up, Josh, at Christmas time, and all of a sudden it clicked me, oh, I gotta show this video. Now, when God looks down and he says, what would it look like if somebody were satisfied, grateful, thankful with what I have given them? Here's what it would look like.
I'm alive! I'm alive!
Yeah?
Yeah! Hey, Christine! You're here too! I love you!
I know!
Dad! What's happening?
Honey, the power works! It goes on and off! Whatever we want! We've got clean water! Bet I know what this does!
Rain down the glorious water!
Shoes. Oh, what do we got here, guys?
Food. I love food. A baseball? Do you not have work? This is awesome. Look, look at here.
Dee, the what?
Jack, be careful.
Oh. I have a car.
Did you guys see this?
Yeah, you have a car.
A car!
And don't forget your coffee.
You're the best.
Okay, you can tell me it was over the top. But shouldn't the spirit in our hearts towards God and His blessings, not what we want, but what He's given us, shouldn't it be that way? Those who are satisfied with God. I don't think I need to speak any more about that one. Now, those who are unsatisfied, dissatisfied with what they got. All right, let me give you a picture of this. For those who are parents, you've been parents, you all understand this very well probably, I don't know. But so you've given, it's Christmas, and you got a bonus, so you were able to really go to town this year, and you bought all ton of gifts, and your kid got like 20 gifts, and I mean, some of them, different range of price, but I mean, some of them were like $200, right? And his kid's tearing into them and everything, and then by the end, he's like, Billy, what did you think of that? It's the $200 one. I don't like it. Well, Jenny down the street, she got the bigger one. Hers cost $250. I'm not satisfied.
Well, what did you think of this cool then Thor outfit that I got you?
I don't like it. I wanted Flash.
Parent, what are you thinking right now towards those kids, that kid? Yeah, if you're thinking I'd like to strangle him, okay, I would absolve you of the thought, not of the action. How do you think God feels when that's our attitude? Dissatisfaction with what we got, with what He's given us?
Well, the neighbors got a new car, and I can't afford that.
Really? Wow. Satisfaction, dissatisfaction. You tell me which person God is more happy with. All right? Here's the cool point, and it's point C. And here's the blank. God's enabling. Because I loved that, how He puts that in verse 19 in the sermon text. Ecclesiastes 5:19, it says, moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him, another version says, empowers him to enjoy them. So it's God empowering, enabling us to enjoy what He's given us, to accept His lot. This is great, God. Thank you. Well, it says, and be happy in His work, like that guy. I got a briefcase. I got a job. Thank you. This is a gift from God, that He enables me to have that kind of contentment and happiness. I love the way Paul puts it. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Okay, those of you accountants or know anything about accounting, you got gains and losses, right? Gains and losses. Are you just focused on the loss category, the things you don't have? Or with godliness and contentment, that is great gain, right? Yeah. I love it when God enables us. And He has enabled every one of us here to be satisfied. Oh, you've got enough. We really do. Our problem oftentimes is we get ourselves in trouble when wanting more, desiring more, we outspend our income. That's when things get tough. So then point three, and then he talks about two in the sermon text, those who hoard wealth or hoarding wealth. If you're taking the notes and filling that in, hoarding wealth. And he says, I've seen a grievous evil. Ooh, wow, that's pretty heavy. A grievous evil under the sun. Wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner. Jesus, you remember, had that parable of the rich fool. And he said, this guy, he was a farmer, and he had a great crop, this bumper crop. And so he was thinking, man, I got more than what my barns can hold. I know what I'll do. I'll tear down those barns, build new ones, and then I'll sit back, take life easy, enjoy life. And God said and spoke, you fool. This very night, I will claim your life, and then who's going to get all that money? And it wasn't because he had money, it was because all he was thinking about is building bigger so that he could than me. When all our thoughts, when we're egocentric, egocentrism means I'm at the center of the world and everything revolves around me, and when we're that way towards our wealth, God is not happy. Here's the way James puts it. He says, you have hoarded wealth. And he says, what you've done is you've fattened yourself for the day of slaughter. Now, that's a scary thought. So the one who's hoarding, it's literally like the cow or the animal that's just eating, fattening himself up for the slaughter. Wow, that's God's perspective. Kind of scary. But in Deuteronomy, and I put these other reference texts, they're right there too in your sermon notes, but that Deuteronomy 15 passage is a great one. And we're commanded by God not to be hard-hearted nor tight-fisted toward the poor. Rather, he says, be open-handed and freely lend to them whatever they need. So it was the lesson I was trying to give the kids, right? So he gives the command, but then listen to the promise that he gives in that same context. Give generously to them, and do so without a grudging heart. Then because of this, check it out. The Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything you put your hand to. Could you imagine then? God looking down, being so satisfied himself with your satisfaction, with your generosity. God so satisfied, he declares blessings over you. He's going to bless your work and bless everything your hand determines to do. I think I'd call that better than job security. You know, some of us who we thought we had job security because we're in a union. Yeah, and when the company moved to India and all those union jobs were gone, is that job security? You can tell me about job security, golden parachute, you got it written into your contract and everything. I'll take God backing me up and living under his blessings any day of the week. But that's God's reaction when we're generous, open-handed, generous. We need to stop the sinful, sickly cycle of thinking that says, I want more and more so that I can buy more and more for me. And we need to turn that around. I want to learn better. God, help me, enable me to manage my finances more and more, better and better, so that I can be more and more generous to others. That's the switch of mentality. So number four, wealth and humility. This wasn't from the text, but it was in my study. It was crying out from the scriptures, a study of the scriptures on wealth, that we need to have a humble attitude towards wealth. I mean, start out right there with the text I put in your sermon notes. It's a well-known text, and it's Jesus. Again, I tell you, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for any of you sitting there and me up here, for any of us to enter the kingdom of heaven. Easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for any of us to get in the kingdom of heaven. Whoa. Really? Well, the disciples said, who then can be saved? Jesus said, well, with man it's impossible. And with God all things are possible, but be humble. I get from that, be humble. And we better be very intentional about how we handle money that God would be pleased with us. I am not talking about works righteousness.
But I'm saved by grace, and so all that doesn't matter.
But we will be judged by our works. Well, how does that work? If we're saved by grace and works have nothing to do with it, no, it doesn't mean that it has nothing to do with it. The works reveal whether or not the faith was real. So when God says, and he does, look it up in the scriptures, he talks about judging by the works. What he's evaluating by judging our works is the works reveal whether or not the heart was right, whether or not there was a real faith, a sincere faith, not just lip service, right? How we manage wealth, it's kind of a test by God, okay? So we need to be humble about it. I'm going to give you all kinds of biblical examples, but the rich man and Lazarus, remember that example? Here was a rich man, nice, wealthy home, dressed in purple. That meant this guy was really wealthy, fine linen, lived in luxury. And here was this beggar named Lazarus at his door. Oh, I mean, a sad guy. But this rich man was hard-hearted, right there on his doorstep, wouldn't help him. Both of them die. Lazarus goes up to heaven and is comforted. The rich man goes to hell. The significant point in the whole story is the rich man went to hell, and at least part of the reason was that God judged him for his selfish nature with his wealth and his coldness of heart toward the poor. He could have helped the guy who literally was on his doorstep, and he didn't. And then here's Paul's thoughts on wealth. He says, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Here it is. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Ouch. And I think he's talking about people in the church there, wandering from the faith, piercing themselves with many griefs. We need to be humble about money. We need to have a loose grip and open up our hearts and be generous to others. The beautiful thing is how God responds to our generosity. You've heard the saying, you cannot outgive God. You start being generous and you start giving, even if it means giving means hurting. And watch how God responds to that sincere, loving heart. And see if he won't open up the heavens and start blessing you. So point five, wealth and maturity. Wealth and maturity. And then it wasn't from the sermon text, but I'm going to quote 1 Timothy 6:17-19 here. And this is what Paul says to young Timothy, the pastor, to a young pastor. I think I'm still young. Anyway, command those who are rich in this present world, that's us, not to be arrogant, be humble, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. God has richly provided us with everything for our enjoyment, and he has. Command them, I command you, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. So I've been preaching about. In this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. If you want life that's truly life, it ain't in the fancy car, in the beautiful dream home, in the great income, and all the accolades that go with it. That's not life. True life. Well, that comes from managing well, being mature about how we manage our money, and literally, prayerfully saying, God, whether or not you give me more, help me to manage what I got so that and maybe I got some debt, so help me to combat that debt, get that down, and when I get that down, help me to be more generous. Help me to be more open-handed. And I understand, please, a little aside, there are some of you here on a fixed income, and that fixed income stays the same, and the expenses keep growing. I understand. And there's some of you there who you're going, are you kidding? I'm up to here with debt. How can I be generous? Okay, so here's where, for those of you who are on the fixed income, God bless you. Be as generous as you can and just see if God doesn't come through for you. All right? But I understand, you don't have millions to give away. It's okay. So those of you who are up to here in debt, what you need to do is learn, pray that God will show you how to get out of debt, to be able to be unshackled, so that you can get that burden off of you and then shift into the real blessing, not wealth necessarily, but generosity. Dave Ramsey, the big guru, Christian guru on financial management, that's what he teaches. The ultimate level of wealth is generosity. It's scriptural. So we need to develop that kind of good money management and then develop point B, satisfaction through generosity. And it says it right there in your sermon notes. The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. So when it comes down to this, are you satisfied? Are you satisfied with the level of wealth that God has given you? And I think if you're not, I mean, just go back to how I opened up the sermon. You got running water. You got electricity. You got more than one pair of shoes. You got this and that. We have been given so much. And there is no call for any of us to be angry at God or frustrated with God as if he's not blessed us richly. It's just to be satisfied. I love that video. May we all then just get into living out that video. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, God. You're awesome. Thank you. And then prayerfully continue to work to manage our money and our wealth better so that we can be generous, and especially to those who are needy. That is good living. That is a blessed person. And may God make us all that kind of blessed. In Jesus' name, amen.